Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling a really pivotal Florida Supreme Court case from 1971, Knorr v. Brevard County Educational Facilities Authority.
That's right.
Now, if you're navigating, you know, the complexities of law school, especially when you get into areas like public finance or constitutional law, this case is going to pop up, and well, for good reason.
Absolutely. Knorr isn't just some dusty old case. It fundamentally shaped how public entities in Florida could finance educational projects, even, you know, when those projects served private institutions. Mm-hmm. It really sits at the crossroads of crucial legal principles. What actually is a public purpose, the constitutional limits on the state lending its credit, and the real nitty-gritty of statutory interpretation.
Exactly. So the core question, the thing this deep dive really aims to unpack for you, is this: how can public bodies provide financial support for private education facilities without, you know, stepping over those constitutional lines?
A tricky line to walk.
Yeah. And we've pulled together a pretty comprehensive set of materials to help us get there. Detailed notes on how to approach this, a full case brief, a standard legal brief, and even some in-depth analysis to make sure we're hitting all the key angles. Okay, let's unpack this. How about we start with the basic facts of the case?
Sounds good. So the story unfolds in Brevard County, Florida. They established an educational facilities authority.
Okay.
And this authority, well, it made a pretty significant move, issuing $880,000 in revenue bonds.
$880,000. And where was that money going?
The beneficiary was the Florida Institute of Technology, or FIT, a private educational institution. The funding was specifically for building a new dormitory and cafeteria on their campus.
Okay, now this is a really critical distinction, isn't it? These weren't your standard government bonds, the ones backed by, like, general taxpayer money.
Precisely. No, these were revenue bonds. And that means the repayment of that $880,000 was designed to come exclusively from the revenues generated by that specific dorm and cafeteria project.
Ah, so the fees students would pay to live there and eat there.
Exactly that. Not from any taxes levied by the county or the state. That's the key difference.
Got it. So we have a private institution getting funding facilitated by a public authority, but the financial backing is directly tied to the success of that specific project.
Right.
Okay, so this is where Philip Knorr comes in. Mm. What was his issue? What was the basis of his legal challenge?
Well, Knorr basically launched a multifaceted legal attack. He argued that issuing these bonds was both unconstitutional under the Florida Constitution and not permitted by existing Florida statutes.
So attacking it from both constitutional and statutory angles.
Exactly. And this set the stage for a legal battle that, well, eventually reached the Florida Supreme Court. Initially, the circuit court down in Brevard County ruled for the authority, saying the bonds were legal. But, you know, that wasn't the end of it.
Right. Which brings us to the heart of the matter, the legal issues raised and how the Florida Supreme Court actually dealt with them. What was the first legal hurdle they had to clear?
The first big question was about the statutory authority itself. Did the Brevard County Educational Facilities Authority even have the legal power to issue these bonds in the first place?
Right, like could they even do this under the law?
Yeah. The relevant law was Florida Statute Section 75.02, which gave bond issuing power to certain political subdivisions. So the court first had to figure out, was this authority legally a political subdivision?
And what did they find? Did the authority qualify?
Yes, they did. The court concluded pretty definitively that it met the criteria. The legislation that actually created these types of authorities explicitly called them a public body, corporate and politic, and a public instrumentality.
Okay, so the statute itself provided the definition.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Based on that clear language, the court said, yep, this authority falls squarely within the category of a political subdivision allowed to issue bonds under the statute.
Okay, so hurdle number one, the statutory authority to act, cleared. Now, let's move to what seems like a really fundamental point, this idea of public purpose. How can helping fund a private institution's buildings possibly count as serving a public good? Isn't there an argument that public mechanisms should only benefit public institutions? How did the court handle that?
Yeah, this is where the case gets really interesting and where the court laid down a key principle. Knorr argued, you know, using public mechanisms for a private entity doesn't sound like a public purpose, but the court firmly disagreed.
Oh.
They gave significant weight, a lot of deference, really, to the Florida legislature's own declaration in Section 243.19. That statute explicitly said that developing educational facilities serves a public purpose.
Even if the education is provided by a private school.
Exactly. The court stressed that the main goal here is the secular goal of educating youth. They saw a broad societal benefit in having an educated population.
Yeah.
And they made a really impactful statement, a direct quote you should probably remember. It matters not whether the education is furnished by a state institution or a private one.
Wow. So the focus shifted.
Right. The court's reasoning was basically, the public good comes from having educated citizens, and it doesn't really matter who provides the education, public or private. This really broadened the whole idea of what counts as a public purpose in this context. It kind of paved the way for financing other private entities that serve some clear public benefit.
That's a really significant widening of the definition, shifting focus from who provides the service to the nature of the service and its public benefit.
Yeah.
Okay, but then comes what many would see as the biggest hurdle, the constitutional question. I know this is huge for law students. Did these bonds violate Article 7, Section 10 of the Florida Constitution?
Yes, the big one.
That's the part that stops the state from lending its public credit to private companies, individuals, associations, even religious institutions.
Absolutely. This was probably the most hotly contested point. Knorr argued that by setting up this financing for FIT, the public was essentially lending its credit to a private institution, which is exactly what the Constitution tries to prevent.
Makes intuitive sense.
It does, but the court drew a really crucial legal distinction. It all came down to the type of bond used, revenue bonds, not general obligation bonds.
We talked about that earlier.
Right, because these bonds were specifically structured to be paid back only from the money made by the project itself, the dorm and cafeteria fees. There was no obligation on the taxpayers. Zero public tax dollars were at risk. No public property was put up as collateral.
So the key was the absence of public financial risk. Repayment was tied only to the project's own performance.
Precisely. The court explicitly stated, and here's another key quote, no public property is jeopardized by default. Because bond repayment was strictly limited to the income from the facilities, the court said, look, this arrangement doesn't count as lending public credit under the Constitution.
So the public purse wasn't on the hook if FIT's dorms didn't make enough money.
Exactly. The risks stayed with the project and the private institution. That's a critical distinction in public-private finance.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Risk stays private, not public. Now, Knorr didn't stop there, did he? He also had issues with how long the members of the Educational Facilities Authority served.
That's correct. He pointed out that the 5-year terms for the authority members seemed to clash with the general 4-year limit for appointed officials found in Article 3, Section 13 of the Florida Constitution.
So was the authority potentially violating that constitutional term limit?
Well, the court found a specific exception right there in the Constitution itself. Article 9, Section 3 deals specifically with educational bodies.
Ah, okay.
And it explicitly allows for terms longer than 4 years for members of such bodies. So the court reasoned, since this authority deals with education, it falls under that specific exception. The 5-year terms were perfectly legal.
So a specific provision trumped the general one. A good reminder to always look for those exceptions.
Definitely.
And then there was also the argument about potential conflicts of interest, mm-hmm. right?
Yes, Knorr argued that letting trustees or employees of colleges, like FIT itself, serve on the authority created an inherent conflict. You know, could their loyalty be divided?
That does sound like a valid concern on its face. How did the court handle that?
Interestingly, the statute that actually created these authorities, Section 243.219, specifically allowed people to serve in both roles.
The law itself said it was okay.
Yeah. The court acknowledged the concern Knorr raised, but ultimately deferred to what the legislature had decided. They found no legal reason to overturn that explicit statutory permission. Basically, they concluded the legislature must have thought about potential conflicts and decided to allow this dual service anyway.
So in that case, the statute directly addressed and permitted the very thing being challenged. Okay, now, we can't ignore the dissent, right? Justice Boyd had a different take. What was his view?
Justice Boyd's dissent raised some pretty significant concerns about the majority's logic and, maybe more importantly, the broader implications of this kind of financing.
Like what?
Well, he argued that the 1968 revision of the Florida Constitution didn't specifically authorize this type of bond deal without some kind of voter approval. He was also worried that the mortgage tied to the bonds, even if it wasn't a direct public debt, could be seen as a sort of hidden or indirect public liability down the road.
Like a potential backdoor risk.
Kind of. It's fascinating, really, to see how even on the highest court, You can have these fundamental disagreements about interpreting the Constitution and what these financial setups really mean long term.
So Boyd was basically pushing for a stricter reading of the Constitution and worried about future risks, even if they weren't immediately obvious with the revenue bond structure. Okay, so to really get the impact here, what were the key legal tests the court actually used to reach the majority decision?
There were two really central tests that drove the court's reasoning. First, the well-established public purpose test. Like we discussed, the court gave a lot of weight to the legislature, saying that building educational facilities, public or private, serves a vital public purpose.
Right. They deferred to the legislature unless it was clearly erroneous.
Exactly. And they didn't find it clearly erroneous here. The importance of education was seen as paramount.
Okay. And the second key test?
The second crucial one was the credit lending test. This goes right back to that constitutional ban we talked about. The court essentially doubled down on the principle. There's no violation of Article 7, Section 10, if the public isn't directly or even contingently liable for the debt.
Because it was revenue bonds.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Since repayment depended only on project revenues, not public money or assets, the court said this test was satisfied. The financial risk stayed private.
So, legislative say-so on public benefit, plus no direct public financial risk. Those were the pillars of the court's reasoning to approve these bonds for a private school. Okay, let's step back. What's the lasting significance of Knorr? Why should a law student today really understand this 1971 case?
Oh, Knorr has had a huge lasting impact on how public infrastructure projects, especially those benefiting private entities, get financed in Florida. It basically established the legal blueprint for using revenue bonds in what we now commonly call public-private partnerships, or P3s.
So it gave the green light for these kinds of deals.
It provided crucial validation, yeah. It showed how to structure these deals to avoid direct taxpayer liability when public bodies support projects serving a broader public good. And this wasn't just for education. The principle has been applied to financing private hospitals, certain infrastructure projects, anywhere you can argue a clear public benefit.
So it really opened the door for more cooperation between public and private sectors in Florida.
Absolutely. And it also reinforces that important idea of judicial deference courts generally respecting legislative findings about what counts as a public purpose unless those findings are totally unreasonable.
Right.
Plus, Knorr is just a crystal clear example of the huge legal and financial difference between general obligation bonds backed by taxes and the government's full credit and revenue bonds tied only to a project's income stream.
And for our listeners, the law students, understanding Knorr is valuable because it hits so many core areas they'll study, right? Con law, statutory interpretation, public finance.
Exactly. It's a practical case study that ties all those threads together. Understanding the reasoning in Knorr gives you a much stronger base for analyzing similar financing deals and for understanding the ongoing debates about the government supporting private activities for the public good. It helps you see the legal constraints and possibilities in P3s.
Okay, so to wrap up our deep dive, what are the absolute key takeaways listeners should remember from Knorr v. Brevard County Educational Facilities Authority?
The core things are, Knorr made it clear that in Florida, revenue bonds are a legal way to finance private educational facilities if the project serves a public purpose, which the court said education inherently does. And crucially, the structure of revenue bonds, tying repayment only to project earnings, is what keeps these deals from violating the Florida Constitution's ban on lending public credit or creating public debt.
So the public gets the benefit, the educated citizens, the facilities, but the direct financial risk stays private. With the institution and the project itself, that seems like the critical balance the court struck.
That's the essence of it.
Okay, now for our final thought today, something for you to chew on after this. We see debates all the time now about public funding for private entities, not just schools, but in lots of areas. How does the legal logic from Knorr way back in 71 actually play into these modern discussions? And thinking about it, since revenue bonds often skip direct voter approval, does relying just on this financing method really address all the potential concerns about, you know, the lines between public and private interests and accountability for how public resources are used? Definitely something to mull over as you continue digging into the law. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.